Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Years ago, a portion of I-77 south of Uptown to the state line was widened. But still, traffic is a mess at almost any time of any day. For years, the North Carolina Department of Transportation had plans to add additional lanes, expanding that portion of the interstate from 6 to 10 lanes, but the geography presents some significant challenges. Several overpasses, for instance, would have to be torn down and rebuilt. The initial projected cost of this project has also ballooned from $1.1 billion in 2020 to more than $4 billion today, which means the state might opt to bring in a private developer to build and operate these additional lanes, which, like the new lanes north of Uptown, would be toll lanes. So this hour, a closer look at all this, at the challenges, the potential solutions, the impact construction would have on traffic, the role of state and local officials, and more. We're joined for this first part of the program by North Carolina State Senator Vicki Sawyer. She represents District 37, which includes parts of Mecklenburg and Iredell counties, and she chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. Thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
As we go through the hour, WFAE Steve Harrison will also be part of this discussion, and we welcome Brett Knipe, NCDOT Division Engineer for the Charlotte area. We'll talk to them in just a few minutes. This could be a mere impression, Senator, but it seems to me that Charlotte is always overlooked in Raleigh when it comes to our road needs. The problem that I-77 expansion would address has been with us for decades, but wasn't addressed even as other parts of the state appear to be getting better roads, better highways, widened roads and projects. For instance, Raleigh. Is that even close to being accurate? And if so, why?
So I shared that same skepticism until I got here and got stuck in Raleigh traffic as well. I think all of North Carolina is needing infrastructure, especially around transportation, because it's such a wonderful state. And as evidenced by so many people who are moving here from the Northeast, from out West, and it just is the chicken or the egg, right? I mean, you get folks here, you need more roads. And yeah, it's just, we're always behind the eight ball. So I'm sorry, Charlotte, I can't tell you that Raleigh gets more roads than you. It actually doesn't work that way, especially from the federal level when the money comes through. And Division Engineer Brett Knipe can attest to that as well, that there is a lot of money that flows to Charlotte, but Charlotte just has a lot of needs.
So a few years ago, if I recall correctly, Raleigh said that any future highway construction on interstates, for instance, would be done through toll roads. And as I understand it, there's still a question about whether these would be toll lanes that we're adding south of Uptown to the state line, whether they would be operated by the NCDOT or whether they would be built and operated by a private company. Why is there a question in this, given what Raleigh's already said about future highway construction?
A $4 billion price tag. I mean, it just costs a lot to build roads, especially 77. And if South Charlotte wants to wait until possibly 2040, then to get I-77 widened, then you can do the traditional road construction method. But the reason why that they are looking to a public-private partnership, or maybe even that being a turnpike controlled project, is because it will be the only way to advance construction through our current system. Unfortunately, the money's just not there to widen I-77 south.
There was substantial pushback prior to the toll lanes opening north of Uptown on 77, and even initially after they opened, but that seems to have subsided over time. People are using those lanes, as Steve Harrison has reported many times. The fact that they are used so well, that might negate the need for the red line, because you get there quicker uptown using the toll lanes than you would on the train. What are you hearing in Raleigh about toll lanes on 77 and the other toll lane projects that have been built and are now running around the state?
Well, what I've been hearing is that we need to have all hands on deck when it comes to transportation projects and building our future roads. I'm also hearing that the department has gosh, between, they really can't even tell me, between 8 and 15, sometimes I hear $30 billion of unmet promises through the STIP project. In other words, if they were to build everything that they were to promise in the state strategic infrastructure plan for the next 10 years, they couldn't afford to do it. And so they're always, and they're just behind the eight ball financially on that kind of stuff. So what I hear is pressure for money for projects all over North Carolina, not just in Charlotte. And I'm not sure how they're going to meet that. We, and under our leadership in the Senate, we've absolutely worked hard to get the Department of Transportation more money, but necessarily more money isn't always the answer. We have troubles with utility construction and movement. We have problems with right-of-way acquisition. There's just things that take a long time with transportation that, quite frankly, are frustrating, but it's just the way the watch works.
If you measure the success of these toll roads, particularly the one on I-77 north of Uptown, if you measure that success by whether or not the company running them is making a profit, then that toll road is a success because they are making a profit. So if they're making a profit, why farm it out to a private company? Why doesn't NCDOT or some other special toll road entity that the legislature creates simply build and operate these tolls and keep the revenue for the state?
Mike Collins, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But I'm serving as the chair of transportation in the legislature. This is an executive branch function. In other words, the governor, no matter who the governor is the one that directs the department and the agency and the one who will ultimately decide these very decisions. But I absolutely agree with you. I also think we should use that same structure in bridges out on the coast. My coastal friends don't really care for that, but there's a lot of bridges that need to be constructed out there. I think a toll is absolutely the way to go if you wanted to have that construction done in the next 20 years. And our North Carolina Turnpike Authority has proven to be very efficient in the tolls that they already, in the lanes that they already manage. I don't know why we wouldn't invest in our own people instead of farming it out to another company.
So as I understand it, there are several options that you folks are looking at, and one of them is making these toll lanes south of Uptown to South Carolina a public-private partnership. Under that arrangement, would taxpayers see some of the profits from these tolls, and if so, how much?
Yeah, that's a good question. That may be something more for the CRTPO or for the DOT to answer on that. I'm interested in, let's get the project done. Quite frankly, I'm frustrated with how long it's taken for all projects to be done, not just 77 South, from the agency to be delivering those things. Again, it's not the agency's necessarily fault, but I live in a community that's has tolls, but also live in a community that has two east-west connectors across the north end of the lake and south end of the lake that have been promised to have been widened, gosh, 20 years ago and still haven't been widened yet today. So there is a systemic issue across the DOT about delivering projects. And I'm excited for the leadership they have now. I think they are going in the right direction and they have a big task in front of them because there's been so much issues in the past and now that's coming to fruition. Those issues in the past are coming to fruition for my constituents where I live on broken promises about construction that's never happened and won't happen for the next year or so.
As anybody who drives 85 from Gastonia into Charlotte or vice versa knows, there's a widening project going on that highway. It is not toll lane funded. What's the difference?
Good question. Again, Mike, I think you probably should come up here and chair a transportation committee meeting for me because you're asking the questions that I ask each and every day that actually doesn't make me very popular sometimes with the agency because I am asking those very questions. I mean, Atlanta, if we look to them, we always say we don't want to become Georgia, but Atlanta has told all of their entry and exits in and out of their community. And that's something that possibly that we need to look. I mean, if my community, I personally, for my daughter who commutes UNC Charlotte, it is not uncommon for me to have a $300 toll bill every month because she is in and out of those toll lanes. And so maybe that's more of a personal decision that I need to talk to her about, but it is not cheap to, that. I also was not a fan of toll lanes when I first started and not necessarily excited about them now, the only thing they are is a way for our community to get road construction faster, and we need it now.
But is it? I mean, if your daughter and you are, I guess you're paying the bill for your daughter because she's a student.
Yes, I am. But, we should have a talk about that.
So, yes, you as a user are paying the freight on her using those toll lanes, but wouldn't it be less expensive if you just raise taxes a little bit on everybody and spread the pain over the entire taxpayer base and then just do these lanes on your own? Put that money into a big pot and spend it on highways.
Yeah, I would like to think that I'd like to live in that universe where that would actually work in the General Assembly, because it just doesn't. I mean, you have seen a very timely conversation about the city of Charlotte in Mecklenburg County asking to increase their sales tax rate so that we can do that same thought across for a public transportation program, including the Red Line. So those very poignant conversations are happening right now, but it doesn't necessarily gin out in Raleigh when you're talking about a Republican-led legislature when you're asking to raise taxes. But again, remember, we have reinvested and done more for transportation than has been done in the past 20 years when it comes to funding. I mean, we diverted sales tax revenue over to the Department of Transportation, so that is no tax increase, and yet that money is now going into those projects. Hopefully we can get those projects directed to new roads into the STIP. But necessarily just raising taxes on all for the benefit of few doesn't necessarily work out always.
You mentioned at the very beginning of this conversation that one of the challenges of using state funding and not toll roads is the timeline. It would delay this project way into the middle of the century. And I understand one of the reasons for that is something called the corridor cap, which controls how much money can be spent on any transportation corridor in a five-year period. It caps it at $630 million, which is nothing when it comes to highway construction. That seems to be an arbitrary and unrealistic number. Is it either or both or neither?
Well, you pinpointed again, Mike Collins. It's something that I have an issue with, is that we somehow, for reasons unknown to me, put a stationary number into general statute and doesn't allow for cost or inflation index or anything like that. So it's just a weird construct that somebody puts, you know, a number into general, you know, statute that has to be when it doesn't adjust for inflation. I think that is something that my transportation chairs and I are definitely looking at. But again, it was the idea that if we were to have unlimited amount of money to go into one region, then the other regions would suffer. So we suffered for many years with the Department of Transportation building beautiful roads to nowhere. Now, the folks on the coast would not say it's nowhere, because they are definitely beautiful roads from Raleigh to the coast. But, you know, that was in reaction, and this corridor cap was kind of like in reaction back to making sure that one area doesn't get more money than the other. But yes, I agree with you that I never thought in my life that I would say $600 million isn't enough, but we're at that point where $600 million isn't enough, and it's something we need to look at.
I only have maybe 30 seconds left, but Charlotte has this transportation plan that has been derided by leaders in both the Senate and the House in Raleigh because it doesn't concentrate enough on roads, and this is a road project. So where do you stand on Charlotte's plan, and does our plan being shifted to more of a road-centric point of view help us in any way in Raleigh? Very quickly, because I'm out of time.
So I am the person who wants to make sure Charlotte's visions are realized. And I believe in local control. We have very smart people who are elected and appointed in and around the Charlotte area that have ideas about what they want to do. So at that point, I take from them what they need, and I'll help them any way I can in Raleigh.
State Senator Vicki Sawyer, who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee, I have to let you go because you have other important legislative things to do this morning. I thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about I-77 expansion south of Uptown to the state line and the probability of it being done in the form of toll roads. We just spoke with State Senator Vicki Sawyer, who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. We welcome into this conversation now WFAE's Steve Harrison, who really does concentrate on transportation in this area, and Brett Knipe, who's a division engineer for the Charlotte Division of NCDOT. And Brett, Steve reported that in early April, you estimated the cost would be of this project would be north of $3 billion. The state quickly chimed in and said, nope, it's going to be more like $4.2 billion, which is north of three, but it's a lot more north of three. Do you agree with that new figure?
Well, so thank you. Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
You know, that estimate was in process throughout the last actually several years as we updated what the scope of this project could be, and then brought in, relative cost information, comparing it to what projects are costing across the state. So yes, 4.2 billion is where we landed. And certainly we're always going to do what we can to optimize and seek efficiencies in any design, in any project we undertake. And that's a large number. I mean, certainly, you're right. It is quite a bit north of $3 billion. But that is where we are today, and we're going to continue to do what we can to bring costs down as we refine that scope.
Just 4 years ago, in 2020, this expansion project was budgeted at $1.1 billion. Now it's up to $4.2 billion. And, of course, there are always cost overruns on these kinds of projects. Why has this project's price quadrupled in just 4 years? Is that normal?
So, yeah, that's actually a great question. In our line of work, when we start estimating a project, really you're talking about an idea, right? It's a concept that our local partners at the local planning organization, in this case, the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization, put a project in the state's transportation improvement plan. That project gets prioritized and programmed amongst other projects. And it's got to be based on, some estimated amount, right? And that was from 2015. The last scope and last estimate we had was really from a feasibility study, right? So that was a different scope. It was different design concepts, and we've been working on it since 2018, 2019 timeframe to revise and modernize those designs and those ideas. And as we've done that, and we've recognized the traffic demands are what they are, each of the interchanges along the route, really have to be reconstructed in order to accommodate any new widening. So with that new scope and with today's cost of construction, that's how we landed at such a high estimate. So it's not like the project cost quadrupled because the project was conceived as maybe, a different concept to where we are today.
So if state officials gave you the go this morning, but between today and the time this project would be finished, how much more do you think it would end up costing?
Wow. Well, so if I knew that, Mike, I'd probably be in a different business. But, one thing is for sure, projects cost more every day that they don't occur, right? Inflation, as everyone has realized and probably felt in their personal lives, over the past several years has spiked dramatically, particularly in the horizontal construction industry that we operate in. So certainly it's going to cost more. Essentially with a $4 billion price tag with today's inflation rates, you're talking about every month that passes by that the project isn't built, that it's increasing by millions of dollars, because we're talking about big, big numbers here. Larger, really, than any other project the state's ever considered.
Mm. Steve Harrison is with us. And Steve, you report that the explosion in costs from the estimated $1.1 billion in 2020 to $4 billion today is one of the factors that will probably make it more likely that the state will turn to a private developer, that in the timeline, to build this and manage this road. Why is that a good idea in the state's mind?
Well, let me back up for a minute. I mean, I think Brett would say very clearly right now the DOT is doing a feasibility study where they're looking at, what it would take if the state did the project in-house versus what it would take to do a public-private partnership, and they're going to come up with some recommendations maybe by the end of the year. But in kind of saying it looks more likely, I mean, in a way, that's just me reading the tea leaves, that I think the state feels like they're getting farther and farther behind. You know, that each day that goes by, they're not getting closer, they're falling behind, that a private company might be able to do this faster. So we don't know that. I mean, but that's just how the direction it seems to be going.
So Brett just mentioned, Steve, that one reason for rising costs is delays. The longer you wait, the more expensive things become. And when you're talking about projects in the $4 million range and you add inflation to that, it mounts up quickly into even higher numbers. A decade ago, you say the state had planned on construction beginning by this year or next, and then in 2020, they slated the project to begin in 2029. But because there's still no money to pay for it, it's going to be pushed back to the 2030s or later, with a finish date sometime in 2045. Why all these delays? Why not just get on with it? Steve.
Well, I think as Brett just said, I mean, they just do not have the money. I remember going back talking to the old division engineer, Barry Moose, 15 years ago, and Barry was thinking we would be starting construction about now, 2024, 2025. It just keeps getting pushed back. And like I said earlier, I think each day, each month that goes by, the project gets farther away. But it's just harder to build than it was a year ago.
But if they're going to ultimately decide that some outside entity builds and operates this highway, why do you need the money? Isn't the money going to come from the private company?
Well, I think that would be, and Brett, Brett, jump in whenever. But yes, I think the idea is that they would come in with money at the table. I mean, one question I do have, though, and Mike, I think you alluded to it earlier, is the toll lanes on Interstate 77 in North Mecklenburg are doing well financially. I mean, there were some questions 5-10 years ago whether they would make money, and they seem to be doing very well. So there is money there. There's revenue there. And, you know, the question is, can the state take out the debt on its own and use that toll revenue to pay its, to pay its lenders back? The state does that. The state assumes debt for toll highway projects like the Monroe, the Monroe connector. And so, if it's possible for Monroe, is it possible for I-77 South and to keep it publicly owned and publicly managed?
Because waiting until 2045, it seems to me that's not sustainable, Brett. Given what we see today, at almost any given time of the day, there are bottlenecks in both directions on I-77 on a clear, sunny day outside of rush hour. You wait to 2045, I would think it's going to be a permanent parking lot. You wouldn't even bother to use it because you can't go anywhere on it. So the longer we wait, the worse it gets. And this city is the economic engine of the state. Any comment, Brett?
Sure. I agree with what you just said, Mike. We do pay close attention to the traffic volumes and the congestion on our routes, all of our routes, especially, our most important routes like I-77. And we know that it experiences, and everyone else that drives it knows that it experiences congestion for long periods of time. And our predictions will tell us that, if you waited, anywhere near 2045 to build a road like this, you're absolutely right. I think the last number I recall was like 17 hours of the day this road would be, completely congested with, creeping and crawling traffic. And so, that's, a real risk if we don't move forward with this project in some form or fashion. But to Steve's point a moment ago, this is, the project will continue to be harder to build the longer we wait, right? And our current legislation does cap the state's investment availability, as Senator Sari mentioned. And so that is a piece of legislation that is what it is. And I understand the reasons it's there. It's the amount of money that the state has to go to transportation projects it's really not on par with when you're talking about a cost of a project of $4 billion. And whether or not the state could deliver that project independent of a third party, that's what we're working on right now. You know, we're trying to complete that analysis.
Yes, you're talking about this feasibility study that Steve brought up a moment ago, but I'm just curious, if you're in the middle of this feasibility study, have the rights of way that you would require to take, we'll talk about this later, to take down all these overpasses and make them wider because you're widening the road below it, which would require you also rebuilding interchanges, et cetera, which would require more land. Have the rights of way been obtained yet?
No, Mike, you know, that's not something that we can undertake. You know, this project currently isn't funded for construction in today's state transportation improvement program because honestly, the money is not there. You know, it's simply these cost increases we've been talking about that's been occurring with every project across the entire state. Really, in other states, you're experiencing the same thing. So your dollar doesn't go as far. And the right of way, you know, we're not able to go out and buy right of way for a project that isn't fully funded for construction. And the right of way for the project, you know, could be a considerable cost itself.
Steve, I mentioned this corridor cap with Senator Sawyer a moment ago, that it's you can't spend any more than $630 million on any one corridor over a five-year period. And at that rate, it would take more than 20 years to have enough cash to pay for this I-77 expansion. Of course, by then, the cost would have risen again, so it would probably take more than 20 years to pay for it. How were we able to build these interstates originally if we can't afford to widen them today?
Well, I think a big part of that, you know, one thing we hear about a lot is just the general revenues that are going into the state through things like gas taxes are going down. You know, cars are more efficient. That's one part of it. That we just don't take in as much money as we used to. I wanted to go back to the corridor cap you mentioned. And I think part of this issue is that, you know, I would say this project is the single biggest, most complex transportation project in Mecklenburg County. It's the one that impacts the most people. And I think to move it forward, there's going to be need to be an effort that goes just beyond the DOT. And what I mean by that is like Charlotte City Council, Mecklenburg Commission, there's going to be need a lobbying push, for instance. This is a special project that's going to need special assistance. And maybe that is Mecklenburg County and the city lobbying the state to lift the corridor cap, do some kind of special legislation. But what's happening now is that local government is really siloed. This is a state responsibility. The city of Charlotte just hasn't shown much interest in this project. They haven't shown a lot of effort to find a solution to move it forward. The idea is that, well, look, this is the DOT's responsibility. We're just not interested. And I think that to make this happen, that's going to need to change.
It appears, Steve, that the city and others on the planning board that came up with the transportation plan have responded to criticism by key legislators that the plan was too rail, bike trail, et cetera, centric and not enough concentration on roads. Now we've flipped and more of the concentration is on roads. So given that response to that criticism, does this help us in any way in Raleigh in lighting a fire under them for this project? This is a roads project.
Well, what the city has done with, like you said, with the transportation plan, they've talked about kind of roads first. And what you know, the situation is that in terms of a percent allocation of money, it's still not really roads first. They're kind of talking about roads more. You know, one thing that I've proposed and written about is the idea, like you said, Charlotte wants to do a penny sales tax increase for transportation, mostly transit. That would raise about, I think, $300 million a year initially. Is there a way for the city to enter into a partnership with the state and front the state some money to get this project moving? Now, I don't think the city wants to pay for it on its own. I mean, they would need to be reimbursed. They don't want to be on the hook for this. But is there a way to use that sales tax money as a bridge to move this project forward, get things going, that would probably get support in Raleigh from Republicans, and then have the state pay the city back over a series of years through toll revenue? It just seems like kind of a win-win, a way to get this thing moving.
Yeah, and you said just a minute ago that the city really hasn't spent much time thinking about I-77. And I looked through again the transportation, the strategic mobility plan yesterday and could not find anything about I-77. Does this expansion fit in any way into our transportation dreams and aspirations?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the reason why it's going to be built with express toll lanes is that was a decision that the city made, geez, I think maybe 15 years ago. They decided that, you know, we're not going to build our way out of congestion. So we want to, you know, do these express toll lanes to have a guaranteed travel time. That was a decision that the city made that I don't think, and Brett, you may be able to correct me, I don't think any other kind of like regional transportation planning group in the state has made that. So the express toll lane that we are getting is a local decision. But Mike, to your point, it's just not something that's on the city's radar. The city is focused on, you know, kind of alternatives to driving. And they're just saying like, look, the driving piece, DOT, you guys handle that. We're out.
So I can't remember whether it was Tim Moore or Phil Berger who said that we should concentrate on more roads in this mobility plan because that's what people use the most, roads. They drive their cars. And Brett, I don't want to put you in the middle of this argument, but as somebody from NCDOT, shouldn't a major interstate that is the lifeblood of the city and is a major corridor in and out of town and a major commuter route in and out of town, which brings people to and from jobs in this area from other states, etc., shouldn't that be part of a mobility plan?
Well, you know, to Steve's point a moment ago, you know, the decisions that were made on about how to handle I-77 and really a number of roads in our area, major interstate routes, were made by some very forward-thinking local elected officials many years ago. And so there is this is a tool in the toolbox. It's a managed lanes project that would, deliver a more reliable travel time. And, it's really, you know, local decisions are what they are. And in North Carolina law, we're required to have local approval for a project like that. And we do because this local planning organization, they did bring this project up, put it in the state transportation plan. And so everything we're talking about today has been a local decision.
When we come back, I want to talk about some of the geographic and other challenges anybody trying to widen I-77 will face. And we'll do that in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Steve Harrison from WFAE News and Brett Kneipp, who is a division engineer for the Charlotte region for NCDOT. And we're talking about highway expansion on I-77 south of Uptown to the state line and the inclusion of toll lanes to make that expansion happen. NCDOT, Brett, acknowledges, we talked about this a second ago, that stretch of I-77 is above capacity from 7 to 11 hours each and every day. And NCDOT knows that the rate of crashes on that portion of the interstate is more than double the state average. Does NCDOT have a dog in this race? Are you actively advocating for expansion? Are you keeping decision makers informed about this rising congestion and the rising number of accidents? Or is your job simply to manage what you have and what you're given?
Well, it's Mike. It's a little bit of both. You know, we're not, first of all, not really advocating for any particular solution here. But what I like to say is I do work towards transportation solutions, right? So, NCDOT is an implementation arm for local decisions that have been made, and so we recognize that the congestion is real. The crash rates are certainly there, you know, that is just data, right? And so along with our local partners, we try to make good decisions on what road projects move forward. In this case, we're talking about a project that has an extremely high price tag. A point I want to make really quick about the crash rates on I-77 South, you know, Mecklenburg County as a whole has experienced increased crash rates. A lot of that can be attributed to the same factors that are causing congestion, right? We're talking about more people. We have more and more people moving in this area. It's a very popular part of the state, a part of the country. So we're constantly growing. So you put more cars on the road, invariably you're going to have more crashes. Just as an example, the I-77 North Corridor, it had a lower growth rate in crashes than the rest of the county had, right? And it has a lower crash rate than it had prior to construction. And that's true with a lot of new highways, right? As we modernize a design, set appropriate speed limits, then we would anticipate crash rates to improve.
If I recall correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't remember how long ago it was, but we did widen I-77. I think it was south of Tyvola to South Carolina, and we added that big swooping interchange into 485. Why wasn't the widening at that time taken up to Uptown? Why did we stop? Why didn't we stop at the Brookshire or the Belk freeways?
Yeah, I think that's a question that I might not be able to answer. I wasn't necessarily in this role at that time. Those decisions really were made decades ago, and transportation planning takes part. We're a part of that process at NCDOT, but at the local level, folks have to anticipate growth, right? We help with that. We participate in the process. We anticipate growth. We anticipate the need, that how many lanes you might need to accommodate the anticipated growth in the region. And the reality is, Charlotte has grown much faster, I think, than anyone has anticipated over the decades. And it does take decades to get to this point and get through these processes sometimes. And so, probably good at the time, but obviously now we need something more.
So the idea here is to go from 6 to 10 lanes. So you'd be adding 2 lanes south and 2 lanes north if you did this, probably toll lanes. Would they be similar to, exactly the same as, or somehow different than the ones that run north of Uptown?
Well, so the project that we're talking about is a managed lanes project, and express lanes, just like I-77 north, where you've got the option, drivers would have an option and a choice to use a tolled lane or a free general purpose lane. And again, that's a congestion management tool, right? And this project, that's a local decision. That's in state law that it has to be a local decision to make that project choice. So it's not really a question of whether or not this is a toll type project, and because it is as we know it today.
Would they go down the middle of the highway as they do north of Uptown? Because I read something the other day that said they might go down the sides of the highway.
Sure.
How do you envision that?
Right now, what we've done to date is at NCDOT, we've been working with the City of Charlotte and their transportation department and our consultants to come up with what we believe would be a reasonable concept, right? What could this project look like? We have a couple of concepts. The first one we've been working on does generally put those lanes in the middle, very similar to the I-77 North Corridor that leads from Charlotte to Mooresville. But could there be other concepts? Yeah, certainly. We're looking, we'll be looking at any possible alternative, even going, aerial in sections, right? Going up in the air, where that might save some money and reduce impacts. So those decisions aren't 100%, they're not set yet, Mike, but we're working on them.
So Steve, since he just mentioned that we might go up in the air, that would make sense to, you wouldn't have to widen, you just go above with the toll lanes. Has anybody talked about going above with a train to, say, Rock Hill?
Well, right now, the only train in, with the Lynx Blue Line runs, of course, in the South Boulevard corridor, that's kind of the alternative to I-77. But the idea now, the plan is to, if there's money, to extend that train over to Ballantyne as opposed to Rock Hill. So it would, there was at one point, there was talk about bringing the Blue Line to Pineville and then to Rock Hill. But now the idea seems to be to take a turn to the east and bring it to Ballantyne. Yeah.
So, Brett, if we did go up as opposed to out, if instead of widening, we just left the highway the way it was and put the toll lanes above it, is that more expensive? Is it more expensive to elevate 4 lanes of traffic than it is to widen a highway that's already there and rebuild all of the exchanges?
So, potentially. I think it's really going to be a case-by-case scenario. If I would anticipate that, you know, any concept that would include, you know, elevated lanes, it would take place where it was more efficient, where it was cheaper, and where it made more sense, right? You know, it probably wouldn't make sense to wholesale, you know, elevate a set of lanes for that 11-mile stretch, because there's areas where you could widen and, you know, not have major impacts, and there's areas where you would have major impacts. And so that's why we're trying to complete some conceptual designs now. And, you know, if this project were decided by the MPO to move forward as a P3 type project, then, you know, it would be competitively bid. And as a part of that process, you know, we would anticipate certain innovations coming, right? We would have fresh eyes and very intelligent folks that could take another look at it, right? And determine, could there be another way to do this? And I think ultimately we'll try to find that optimum solution I spoke to earlier.
So I'm not going to say you're in the middle of that process. I'm going to say you're at the beginning of that process. So you probably don't know the answer to this, but whatever you do, you're probably going to have to take down some of the overpasses, widen them, rebuild the entrances and exits from those overpasses, move the utilities, get the rights of way, etc. How many of the existing interchanges do you see having to go through that reconstruction process?
Well, we know that if the new lanes are going to be at ground level, where they are, you know, adjacent to the existing lanes today, that would require reconstruction of every interchange between South Carolina and downtown, or uptown rather.
Including the big flyover.
So I was going to say, with the exception of I-485, the concepts that we've come up with, you know, we've really done what we could to preserve that and not impact that. And that might be a scenario where you would have a section of aerial lanes, right, to go around that, as opposed to through it and under it, where you have limited space. But that depends on a lot of factors that we haven't completed yet. But certainly, reconstructing the entire 45 interchange probably wouldn't be the most optimal outcome, right? We probably wouldn't seek that.
So if I-77 is a nightmare today, and it is at certain times of the day, and it's always congested, what would it be like as you tear these interchanges down, close them for the time being, replace them, and the years that would take? What would it be like to use that highway?
Well, you know, we're all part of traffic, right? We've all experienced road construction. We know that it can be difficult, right? And I like to say sometimes we have to rip that Band-Aid off and get that work done so we can have that improvement and experience that improvement and receive that economic development that comes with the improvement. But yes, Mike, I spent a lot of time thinking about that. I think that it's certainly going to be challenging from a construction standpoint, very technical. You know, some of these bridges would have to be reconstructed in segments. Maybe some of them could be closed, but, you know, ultimately that's part of what drives up cost, right? How to build and navigate in such an urban tight area.
More than an amount of time to do simple road projects. It just takes forever to get them done. And yet in Connecticut, they had a big accident under an I-95 overpass and involving cars that set a gasoline truck on fire. And they had to take the entire bridge down on a Friday and rebuild it. It opened on a Monday, the next Monday. If they can do it that fast, why can't it all be done that fast?
Man, I thought the same thing, you know, several years ago. There was a bridge carrying, I believe, I-85 in Atlanta, big fire under it. The bridge had to be, you know, it was destroyed, right? It had to be torn down. And there was some really, and I'm not familiar with the Connecticut example, but I've paid a little bit of attention to what happened in Atlanta a few years ago. There's some very innovative techniques that were implemented from an engineering standpoint. But, you know, in those cases, you didn't have to go through right of way. You didn't have to move the utilities. All that stuff was there. And plus the portions of the bridge could be salvaged in those cases, right? Maybe it's just the bridge girders and the deck that had to be removed. And then you could reconstruct that with a very fast method, you know, which would not be the most economical method, but certainly in a case like that, an emergency situation, those decisions were made by those DOTs. Here, we're talking about a larger scope.
We've been told many times, and Steve alluded to this a minute ago, Brett, that you cannot road build your way out of congestion. We've been told time and again that simply adding lanes to existing highways won't really relieve congestion because drivers will simply fill up those extra lanes as quickly as they are built. Do you agree with that? And if that's so, how will widening I-77 help?
So I do agree with that. You know, I think if you widened any very busy corridor with just general purpose lanes, I think you'd see initial improvement, right? Until the growth in the region and more vehicles started to come and use the corridor. And so the capacity on any kind of highway like that would fill up and very quickly. Whereas with a managed lane and an express lane corridor, you're able to meter the amount of traffic that uses those lanes, mm-hmm. and therefore providing that reliable travel time. That also benefits general purpose lanes because that removes some of those vehicles that would be there. So it does reduce congestion in those general purpose lanes as well.
Steve,
that's the theory behind it all.
Steve, when the I-77 toll lanes north of Charlotte were being built, and even after they initially opened, there was a lot of brouhaha about a private firm owning and operating these for, 50 years, I think it is, and controlling how many other widening projects could be done because they want to get the revenue that they were promised from these toll lanes. And a lot was made of Cintra, who had had problems in other parts of the country. They're a Spanish company, and their local arm, I-77 Mobility Partners, was going to operate this, and there were lots of concerns about that. Has any of that proven to bear fruit, or were they needless concerns?
Well, Mike, I mean, you talked about there were concerns, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, whether the roads were going to make enough money, whether Cintra was going to make enough money on the roads, whether it was going to be financially viable. Now, that has turned out, I think, to be not true. I mean, they are doing very, very well. Their revenue for 2023 is going to be much higher than 2022, much higher than 2021. I think one of the key issues that the data points to think about moving forward, whether to do it in-house for the state to do I-77 South in-house or to turn to a private company. The private company might do it faster, but we may be paying higher tolls as a result of that. I mean, if the state has the ability to set the tolls, their priorities are to set a toll to keep the traffic moving, to cover their operational costs, to cover their debt. They're not necessarily in the needing to make a profit. And
right.
And one thing I've noticed on 77 North in the middle of the day when traffic is moving and there's really no congestion, it's still really expensive to use those toll lanes. You don't have to use them, but they found a sweet spot that people will pay, you know, 50 cents a mile, 75 cents a dollar a mile, and they'll charge that.
State and regional planners rejected an unsolicited proposal by Cintra to construct and manage lanes that we've been talking about, Brett. And you told the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization back in August of last year that Cintra's proposal was not flawed and, in fact, checked all the boxes. So given all the cost considerations we've been talking about, why would they have rejected that?
Well, you know, again, that's a local decision, right? We put that in front of our local partners at the MPO to ask the question, do you want us to review this unsolicited proposal? Ultimately, you know, a work group was formed and that work group, you know, recommended, you know, that really this proposal was not materially different than the project that we have in our state transportation improvement plan today, same project that these same locals had already chosen, right? So it wasn't materially different. And so I don't think there was motivation to you know, take that to the next step. But what they did ask us to do as a follow-on to that was to complete this comparative analysis. And that's what we're working on now. We're comparing and contrasting what a P3 delivery would look like compared to a public delivery. And that information is coming out later this year.
So in 10 seconds or less, when might we see some movement on this and a decision made?
Well, that's certainly going to be up to the locals, right? I think we'll be back in the coming months in front of them. Hopefully we'll have some information really soon.
Brett Kneipp with NCDOT, Steve Harrison with WFAE News, and earlier State Senator Vicki Sawyer. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.